Caviar did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, NHS training places sit empty while qualified graduates work 0 hours contracts, unable to secure permanent positions on hospital wards that desperately need staff. The block operates through Treasury spending limits that treat nursing education as a cost to be rationed, rather than the investment that connects trained professionals to the care system.
I grew up on the Benchill Estate in Withenshaw, watching my Tamil dad leave for his shift at Manchester Airport every morning at 5 a.m. and my mum head off to her teaching assistant job by 7:30. When my nan got ill, really ill, I spent months in hospital waiting rooms watching the nurses work. They moved between patients like they had some kind of internal compass that always pointed toward whoever needed them most. I knew then that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the person who knew exactly how to help when someone was scared and in pain. I got my nursing degree from Manchester Met in 2019, top third of my class. I was ready to start making a difference, ready to step onto a ward and begin the work I'd been training for. That's when I discovered that having the qualification and being allowed to use it were two completely different things. I applied for the NHS Graduate Training Scheme at Manchester University NHS Foundation Trust in early 2020. Perfect timing, I thought. Fresh out of uni, eager to learn, ready to commit years to the service. The response came back within a week. All places were filled due to budget constraints from Health Education England. Budget constraints. It sounded reasonable at first. Budgets have limits, don't they? Organisations have to live within their means. I tried Withenshaw Hospital directly. Same story, different words. They had a recruitment freeze because Treasury spending limits meant they couldn't fund new positions. The manager who spoke to me seemed genuinely sorry about it. "We'd love to have you," she said, "but our hands are tied. The funding just isn't there." Again, it sounded like basic financial management. You can't spend money you don't have. I broadened my search across Greater Manchester. At Stockport NHS Foundation Trust, I met Yasmin, another nursing graduate who'd been trying to get a permanent position for 18 months. She'd been given the exact same explanations I had. Health Education England's budget was capped. Treasury spending limits. No funding available. "It's happening everywhere," she told me. "All of us with the same qualifications, all of us ready to work, all being told the same thing." So I took agency work. 0 hours contracts that paid less and offered no security, moving between different hospitals depending on who needed emergency cover. I kept reapplying for permanent positions, kept hearing the same explanations. For 2 years, I worked in the system I wanted to join properly, watching the staff shortages firsthand, knowing I could fill one of those gaps if someone would just let me. In 2022, I had to attend a mandatory update session at the old Withenshaw Hospital Training Centre. I walked into a building I'd never seen before, 3 floors of classrooms and simulation labs. As I waited for the session to start, I looked around. 3 classrooms completely empty, dust covers over simulation equipment that looked like it had barely been used. The place could easily accommodate 60 trainees, but there were only 20 of us there for updates. I asked the tutor about it. "Why are these rooms empty?" She looked uncomfortable. "We had to turn away 40 applicants this year," she said. 40 people who wanted to train, who met the entry requirements, who could have used these exact facilities. So why didn't they get places? "Health Education England's budget was capped by Treasury," she said. "We can't create training places without the funding, even though the facilities and trainers are here." I stood in that empty classroom looking at unused equipment and unused space, thinking about Yasmin and dozens of other nursing graduates working agency contracts because they couldn't get permanent positions. And suddenly the explanation didn't sound reasonable anymore. If the people existed, and the facilities existed, and the trainers existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints the notes and mints the coins had told Health Education England it couldn't find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But those people existed. The skills could be taught. The materials were available. The classrooms were sitting empty, waiting. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The same logic as a household saying, "We can't afford it," except a household doesn't issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I used to accept that there was no funding. I hear it differently now. When Treasury sets spending limits on nursing education, They're not discovering a natural law about scarce resources. They're making a political decision about priorities. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the hospital wards needed staff. They did. All of them. I'm still here, still working agency contracts, still watching permanent positions go unfilled, while qualified nurses like me wait for someone in Westminster to decide we're worth the investment. But I understand now that what happened to me wasn't bad luck or economic necessity. It was the result of political choices made by people who had alternatives. The government that issues the currency chose not to spend enough of it to connect the people who wanted to work with the places that needed them. They called it fiscal responsibility. I call it what it is, a decision to leave resources idle and needs unmet, then blame the accounting.
What Caviar experienced has a name. Fake experts. Fake experts operate by citing authorities who present contested ideas as settled fact. When tobacco companies wanted to delay regulation, they didn't hire random people to question the link between smoking and cancer. They hired scientists with real credentials who ignored the overwhelming evidence and amplified the small minority of studies that showed no clear connection. The credentials were real. The expertise was selectively applied. The same pattern operates when officials cite, "Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation," to justify leaving training places empty. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The officials present one strand of economic thinking as though it were natural law, just as tobacco executives once presented cherry-picked studies as definitive science. In Caviar's story, Health Education England treated Treasury spending limits as though they were discovering the edges of what was physically possible. But the UK government issues its own currency. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Withenshaw and Sale East, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Withenshaw and Sale East ranks 52 out of 543 English constituencies on the deprivation index, placing it in deprivation decile 1, according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 2,151 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Those organisations received £33.6 million in total grants according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.